It's Here and Now. Blogger, restaurateur, and provocateur Eddie Huang pushes the boundaries of good taste on his own show on the Vice Network. Recently, as a guest judge on Bravo's Top Chef, he also pushed a contestant who probably regrets being flip about a missing ingredient.
We're going to do a lemongrass pork sausage, but we lost the lemongrass in translation.
How'd you lose the lemongrass in translation?
Why?
Tell us.
Bauhaus, Eddie Huang's New York restaurant, draws raves. And earlier this year, both the New York Times and Anthony Bourdain praised his memoir, Fresh Off the Boat. In it, Eddie writes about growing up an outsider in Orlando. Not white, but not the model minority Asian stereotype either. His Taiwanese parents fought. Dad was something of a gangster before becoming a successful restaurateur. And as Eddie writes, Mom once went all Connie Corleone and flipped a dinner table. When Eddie was 9, another kid called him a racial slur, and there was the first of many lunchroom fights.
From that day forward, I promised that I would be the trouble in my life. I wouldn't wait for people to pick on me or back me into a corner. Whether it was race, height, weight, or my personality that people didn't like, it was now their problem. If anyone said anything to me, I'd go back at them harder. And if that didn't work too bad for them, I'd catch them outside after school.
Ultimately, there'd also be a felony conviction. But then Eddie Huang graduated from college and law school and opened the wildly successful Bauhaus. He writes about it all in the expletive-laced Fresh Off the Boat, out in paperback today. We spoke last March and asked first about that upbringing.
On my block, it was me, there was Barry Larkin, 3 doors down from me. My Persian friend Romine was up the street. And then my other buddy Eric, who was Dominican, was about 2 streets over. And we were the only people of color in the entire subdivision. All right. In Arnold Palmer's Bay Hill, that was it.
And this is after, as you got older. I mean, you know, this wasn't when you were young.
Yeah, I was 14
years
old.
As your dad got more successful, right?
Yeah, when I was 14, my dad became a millionaire. Growing up, we really never had money. So it was pretty shocking for me. My dad was successful. We moved to this neighborhood. But even in that neighborhood and even with money, money can only change you so much. I had already identified really as kind of a deviant, as kind of an outcast, as a person of color. And being in that neighborhood when the only black person was Barry Larkin, you know, we kind of all got lumped together.
What were some of the things that made you feel, I'm different?
There's racism everywhere. When I was 9 years old in Florida, this kid Edgar pulled me by my shirt, threw me to the ground in the lunch line and said, "Chinks, get to the back." Mm. And it wasn't that I realized. People made me realize what I was.
Well, get some more examples. As a younger child, I mean, your parents were Buddhist and you went to a Christian school because it was the better school. And the teacher there said to you, if you wanted to participate in class and go to heaven, you had to let Jesus in your heart.
I mean, yeah. Yeah, it was kind of forced upon me. And I wanted to write the book because I wanted to write it for other kids like me who felt like there wasn't a voice talking about the things you go through, even in urban sprawl America. There are a lot of insidious things that happen to kids of all races and all walks of life in these neighborhoods in America. And I also, one of the big things we wanted to do is I wrote it in this voice. I wrote it with this vernacular and with this slang, because that's how we talk.
It's almost like Our Gang, but, you know, on steroids, you know, the old TV show. It's like you and your friends were talk tough and act tough and have this street lingo and play basketball. Horrific fights. You were
I was
ready
rebellious.
To go off.
Yeah. You know what it is I was hit at home a lot. My parents had a bit of trouble, and I felt like sometimes they took it out on me. And I remember even going to, like, psychologists and be like, you can blame them. It's okay. I'm like, I don't want to blame my parents.
Well, let's talk about that, because I, as I was reading, I was wondering, a lot of it was external, the racism that you faced every day as a little kid. But some of this was, it seemed, internal to the family. I mean, your dad, very tough on you. I mean, there's a lot of name calling. Your mom made you slap your face as you drove out of the car because she didn't like something that you did, so she made you constantly slap your face. Another time, the kids were hit with a brush and social services had to come.
Yeah, that was very, very strange to deal with social services.
Was that an immigrant experience they were having and reacting to? What do you think?
Yes, that's a very, very good intuition on your part. My mom came over when she was 17, and she was even the salutatorian of her high school without speaking English much. And she always told me, I always wanted to have kids early so I could grow up with them, because my grandmother, she had bound feet. And then right after my mom was born, or right before, my grandmother had an aneurysm. So my mother really didn't get that full experience with her mother. So she always wanted to have kids when she was young. She had me in college. She was about 20, 21 years old. And even though I'm technically second generation, my mom was only here 4 years when I was born. Mm. So it's almost like we came over together. But, you know, we discovered America together, and we really, really struggled. I remember my dad bartended and somebody ordered a martini, and he didn't know whether to put an olive or a cherry in it. Mm. I mean, somebody ordered a martini at a Chinese restaurant. That's their fault. You know, so they order the martini. My dad can't figure it out. He puts a cherry in it. He goes to the table, and they all laugh at him, like, ha, this Chinaman bring martinis with a cherry in it. And he got so mad. He didn't know what to say. He just came back with a bunch of olives and threw them on the table.
Yeah. So he's angry, too.
He's angry, too. We were all... This generation of immigrants in America, it was not easy to be born in the 80s in America and to grow up in that circumstance in the suburbs. It just goes to show you, you could have clothes on your back, a roof over your head, and food in your mouths. And emotionally, intellectually, mentally, there's so much more to being an American than food in your mouth. And I really feel like we were robbed of the American experience at times.
And where are you now? We should say, for those who don't know of your career, you dabbled in stand-up comedy. You went to the Food Network's Ultimate Recipe Showdown. People started responding to your cooking. You took the path to super cooking superstardom. What happened? Did you finally say at one point, I feel like I've arrived, I've been accepted, I can leave that anger of my childhood behind? You're nodding yes.
That's a great question. You know what it was? It was the day that Chris Jackson at Random House, Spiegel and Grout, bought this memoir. I remember going to sleep, and I woke up the next day, and I said, somebody's giving me the opportunity, and all I've ever wanted in life, in America, is an opportunity to tell my story.
What would you say to other Asian kids who, I mean, there is that, you know, model minority pressure. The joke is, by the way, you were somewhere in there part of that model minority. You're really smart. And ultimately, when you weren't getting beaten up and getting blood all over your papers, that you were submitting, you did prove that.
I went through the Asian Olympics. You know, I did the violin. I did piano. There's a certificate in my house somewhere. When I was 12, I was like National Guild Honorable Mention for piano. The world is so funny is when you don't hang out with people in the Asian community or in the Black community or in the Latino community, you see them as flat characters. America presents us as flat characters. Like, you're a gangster and you're a nerd and you're a model minority. But the thing is as much as I was a deviant, as much as I've gone almost out of my way to get in trouble at a lot of times, I think that now when we look back, probably people in the nation are like, that kid is a model minority. At the end of the day, he went about it his own way.
Yeah.
Ended up at the same spot.
So what would you tell young people who might be feeling constricted by the expectation of them, or maybe feeling the anger of the racism that they still perceive, or maybe feeling like, but wait a minute, Eddie Huang, I am not going to be able to have the restaurant and quote from Jonathan Swift the way you do.
It's two sides. I would tell young people, don't do things because you think you're supposed to do things. Do things because you want to do them and you really are inspired and passionate about doing them. I always tell people there's Asians in mountains, there's Asians in lakes, there's Asians in Uggs and rollerblades. You could do anything you want to do, but I would tell older people, I really truly believe, and from working at the restaurant, we will be better off as a country if people gave young people the opportunity and experience to breathe and make some mistakes.
Eddie Huang, a blogger, restaurateur, now author of the memoir Growing Up Taiwanese American. It's called Fresh Off the Boat. Eddie, thanks so much for coming in to talk.
No, thanks for having me.
And Eddie's book is out in paperback today. We spoke last March. For our extended conversation, go to hereandnow.org. From NPR and WBUR Boston, I'm Robin Young.
I'm Jeremy Hobson. It's Here and Now. Funding for Here and Now comes from Reputation.com, dedicated to protecting businesses and people everywhere from negative content in online search results. More at Reputation.com.